You're listening to the Modern Web Podcast. For more podcasts, videos, and events, find us online at modern-web.org or follow us on Twitter at modern.web. That's modern.web.
Sean Wang talks about how to go from software engineer to AI engineer and mental models for approaching AI literacy and skill building.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Modern Web Podcast. Here today with myself, Tracy. You can follow me on Twitter at Lady Leet.
Thanks for joining us, Tracy.
Yes. And I'm joined by my co-host, Rob.
Hey, everybody. I'm Rob Ossell. I'm an architect at This.Labs.
Yes. And then Sean. Sean's been on before, but Sean Wang, you are now editor of Latent Space. If you haven't checked that out yet, is it latent.space as the website?
Yeah, we like the short domains. Yeah.
Yes, and then the co-organizer of the AI Engineering Conference. Is it AI.engineer?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Very short. Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
I can talk about the origin, yeah.
Yeah, and Sean's been on the podcast before, but I think you've been on when you were more svelte? I think that was the last time we had you on, and now you have just like dived into this AI space, and we're so excited to have you.
Yeah. So
thanks for having me.
Maybe start there. Like, you know, obviously if people might know you more from your Twitter account, Swyx, SWYX, and, you know, people who have been around for a long time remember you from your building in public. Not that that's changed, but you were one of the people that really made that catch fire years back. And then I remember the last time we were talking, it was a lot about the third age of JavaScript. And now you're huge into the AI ecosystem. I was wondering, maybe to start out, to introduce yourself, can you kind of draw a through line to us? Like, do you see this as all evolutions of answering the same types of questions? Or what is it that kind of attracts you to each of these and that ultimately sort of attracted you to the AI space?
Yeah, that's a great framing, and you have really good context, which we can talk about later. TLDR, like, svelte kind of got boring. Third age of JavaScript was mostly like proved correct, so there's nothing left to prove. So then you move on, right? Like, I mean, I don't have to stay on the same thing forever, especially if it's like, you know, major, like, part of the thesis of third edition JavaScript was a few things, like, right, React, front-end frameworks will become more compiled, right? So Svelte was on the leading edge of that, and now React is working on the compiler. Like, yeah, did that, called that 4 years ago. I mean, what do I do? Do I keep doing talks with the same exact content? Like, no, like, it's boring. Another thing was, you know, systems core scripting shell, which is another part of the 30 JavaScript thesis. And now major parts of the JavaScript ecosystem and Python ecosystem are being rewritten in Rust. And like, do I keep making talks about that? No, like, it's just like, work has to be done. Work is ongoing, and it'll happen. Like, Tailwind's being rewritten in Rust. Turbo Repo was originally Go, now rewritten in Rust. Things are happening, and, you know, like, it's not going to be it's gonna play out incrementally over the next 10 years by the people working on it. And, you know, I think it's good enough for me to call attention to it. And it's good enough for the ecosystem to be aware that these are the big bets that you want to make. These are all talks I've done for people who want to see it. Go to, like, the Reactathon, I think 2022 talk that I did, where I, like, laid out, like, you know, where this all is going. Obviously AI is, like, on top of a lot of people's minds, including you guys's. My history with it comes actually from before I was in tech. I used to work as a trader in the derivatives desk, in the currency derivatives desk of Standard Chartered in London. And I actually created my first NLP application, just taking in broker quotes. And it was just natural language, like, on the Bloomberg terminal, like, quotes of options would come up, and I would have to scan them and note them down and then price them. And it was all this kind of very routine operation. So I effectively wrote my own app. And this was the first, like, real production language I learned, which was Haskell, not JavaScript, not Python. I learned Haskell first. And I wrote an NLP application in Haskell to, like, consume those broker quotes and spit out, like, option pricing, you know, like, and we were traded billions and billions of dollars of options on that app that I made. So, like, that was the state of NLP at the time, like, very, very simple, like, entity recognition and, you know, parsing of text, but not really, like, intense, not really reasoning, any other stuff that we deal with now. I started Latent Space because Stable Diffusion came out, and it was like so mind blowing that I could run that whole, like basically all of sort of generative images on my laptop, and I thought that was really interesting. And then obviously ChatGPT blew everything up in 2022. And then about a year ago, I started noticing that there's a lot of demand for people building with AI who are not ML engineers. And I noticed this on two levels, like the demand side and the supply side of the labor market, right? Like on the supply side, obviously a lot of software engineers wanted to spend their nights and weekends doing stuff, and things that people spend their nights and weekends doing tends to become their day jobs eventually, right? Like that's what they're really passionate about. And on the demand side, companies wanted to hire people that they saw on Twitter like doing interesting things with AI, but they didn't. There weren't enough of them, and two, they didn't have the traditional ML engineer background, right? They did not do the PhD. They did not have years of experience in data engineering. They don't even know PyTorch, but they know how to take foundation models and put them in applications and make money, get users, get a lot of attention, all of which are things that companies always, always, always want to do. And so effectively, I was like, all right, let's put the label on this thing, make it an industry. And I called it the AI engineer. I wrote a post about it, and I bought the domain, and I announced the conference. And you know, like it was basically off to the races from day one, because Andre Karpathy read it and basically came out and endorsed it. He was like, "There will be more AI engineers than ML engineers. It's just math. It's just like the law of demand and supply." So I think once I convinced him, I convinced everyone. So that was the start of the journey.
So we know that you love when you find a topic that you like, you know, it kind of comes from your learning and public ethos. You voraciously devour as much information and context and interesting opinions from people. So I made the observation sort of offhandedly to somebody else recently that I saw you as being one of the people probably seemingly as close to the front edge of the, I don't know if you want to call it the hype wave or the adoption curve on some of this stuff as many people there are. And I guess my question is what do you hope to use your position and influence to do? And to some extent, I think the AI engineer sort of World's Fair maybe indicates that. Are you hoping to steer where the research goes? Are you hoping to steer where have an influence at that level? Are you hoping to just help guide engineers? Like, what are you hoping that your impact is kind of in this community? Or are you just knowledge for knowledge's sake?
Knowledge for knowledge sake is a worthy goal, but I have found a cause that I believe in more strongly than that, which is very rare for me. So I am hoping to create an industry, to create and legitimize the AI engineering industry. I've said this from the start. I expect this to be a 10-year journey for me. So no more hopping around because I... Unlike the other things that I've done, where I, you know, I ran the React subreddit, I started Svelte Society, I talked about the third age of JavaScript, I have been developer relations in AWS and Temporal. This time, I'm very, very center of it, and I have much more of a responsibility. People look to me for a lot more direction than all the other roles combined. And so, yeah, I mean, this time it's kind of real. This time it's all in, and I do think that my goal is to start an industry. I think that this thesis that I mapped out in the Rise of the AI Engineer post is correct. It's going to take 10 years to play out, and when you see it playing out, you will see what's in my head right now that doesn't exist, which is a fully legitimized AI engineering industry that people see on the same level as data engineer, DevOps engineer, and to some extent, even front-end engineer. I think AI engineer will do better than front-end engineer, though.
So what is an AI engineer, then?
Yeah, right. Sure. Like... I should probably have a pat definition, right? AI engineer is a software engineer that specializes in working with the emerging AI stack. It is not, AI engineer is not a ML engineer or research scientist. AI engineer often has the qualities and the background of a full stack engineer, meaning front end and back end, but they may not even have web development experience. What they do need to have is complete familiarity with all the tools and techniques that is emerging in cutting edge foundation model application, right? Like, it's very much less research. You know, Rob, you mentioned, like, am I hoping to affect research? Not really. You know, that, there are conferences for that. It's much more about AI has now crossed the chasm from research to production, and that's where engineers shine. And so what I conceive of the AI engineer industry is helping people take foundation models, which have a lot of raw latent potential in them, and specializing in them and deploying them to production for custom use cases, to help people to make money, all that good stuff. So that's the AI engineer. If you see the Rise of the AI Engineer blog post, you see this kind of line, which really helps clarify it for most people. There's a spectrum between machine learning research and the end user in production. And so on the, yeah.
Well, just kind of breaking down AI engineer, is that everywhere from building an LLM or an SLM to using, you know, kind of like some of these APIs out there, or is like building LLMs and SLMs like not part of being an AI engineer? Okay, yeah, so that's where it ends.
Yeah, people typically say training, and you know, people typically say pre-training. So AI engineering starts where pre-training ends, right? It's post-training. So that's everything, including taking an API off the shelf, which a lot of the top models are closed and proprietary, and you can only work with APIs. And that's fantastic. Like, the closed labs love AI engineers because that's their target customer. But also, obviously, everyone wants control. So being able to self-host open source models is definitely part of the AI engineer curriculum, and then being able to fine tune them as well. To have that degree of control. But you do not need the traditional PhD or ML engineer route to be productive with foundation models. And I think that's my main message and discovery over the past year.
Are you seeing a demand in these types of engineers? I mean, I think before the podcast, we talked about AI engineer job posts now being posted, but are you seeing people look for AI engineers?
Put it this way. Recently, I found, I'm sharing this in the chat, I recently found that OpenAI just posted their first job posting for AI engineer. Like, they themselves are trying to hire this. And there's demand all over. When I announced it, like, IBM was like, we're hiring hundreds of AI engineers. There's like all sorts of startups who come to me now. We really should set up a job board. Like, I just haven't got around to it. But that's not the point. The point is to coin a handle that everyone understands is a short form for this set of skills that we want, this set of background that we want. And that's what people call a shelling point, right? Like, where, you know, uncoordinated people will use this same terminology and same set of beliefs and same, curriculum to refer to this rising industry. And like, that's how you start an industry. I think like it's gotten some traction. Like, right now on Hacker News, I just saw like someone saying, how do I transition from software engineering to AI engineering? And it's a thing. Like, I think, what is the win criteria? I think the win criteria is when like it feels like a legitimate job, because it doesn't right now. It's definitely a small army of hackers all over the place. But when you have the industry conference, the industry survey, like, you know, companies, you know, putting AI engineering on their landing page and then IPOing, then you have one.
It's definitely better branding than prompt engineer. I'll say that.
Yeah, and there's a conscious choice between that. I went through a lot of candidates. I actually listed the candidates on the original blog post. The reason, I would typically say prompt engineering is so 2022 and AI engineering is so 2023. We can discuss what 2024 is. But the reason you want to do AI engineering is that you want to use code to orchestrate LLMs. And that makes you so much more powerful than using natural language, because LLMs are just not there yet. And we know how to scale software systems to billions of users, and we don't know how to scale LLMs to do most of the use cases that we actually wanted to do. So you have to augment LLMs with code, and you know, that's the domain of the software engineer. The research scientists and the machine learning engineers don't really care about that stuff. They just want to improve their benchmarks and then serve their models.
What is kind of your thought on the learning path for AI engineers? You know, I know, like, you know, your pinned tweet on your Twitter is this idea of long-term games, of like thinking of systems and systemized thinking. So, you know, on the one hand, every time you open up your browser, there's another announcement of another product launching that is phenomenal and amazing. And I could see that for somebody that's just sort of trying to be a part of this, you can get caught up in this constantly playing with the latest toy, but never actually building anything, or maybe not understanding how the pieces go together. So what is the way that people should approach learning to become an AI engineer kind of in this space? How do you sort of recommend that people develop down this career path?
Yeah, that's fantastic. I have a 5-part answer to this. It's absurd. Okay, so first of all, what is core knowledge that is required, right? Like, I think everyone should have some kind of curriculum that they would go through and go like, okay, now I'm like at least kind of onboarded. I know what I don't know, instead of I don't know what I don't know. And for me, that is Leighton Space University, LSU, to trigger the Tigers. It is basically like a 7-day free email course where, like, I was like, okay, if you had 1 hour a day for 7 days, like, and you like talk to me to ask me my recommendation, I would just send you to this thing, because a lot of people ask me stuff. And it's my selection of like a survey, like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, just enough to get you familiar, and then also to give you more homework if you want to dive in a little bit more. So that's a 7-day email course. It's starts with being completely familiar with the OpenAI APIs, because that's where 95% of people run their production workloads, and then going into code generation, into RAG, which we're going to talk about, into multimodality with image generation and audio recognition, open source models and fine tuning them, and then AI agents. Like, you'll end the course building your own AI agents, but using the tooling that we developed over the past 7 days. And that's a free course. I think that's more of the public service, just because people keep asking me where to start. That's the foundations, right? Like, those are things like you shouldn't start by, everyone will still tell, like a lot of people tell you, like, start by reading Attention Is All You Need, 2017, Vaswani et al. And no, like, the people making millions right now with AI, like, don't actually know Transformers that well. Like, they know how to use Transformers. It's kind of like being like a race car driver or something, and like needing to know like how the first Model T was designed by Ford. Helpful, but like very, very little to do with like modern.
Yeah, very low driving. Efficiency on that.
I think the car analogy is like very stretched, because obviously race car drivers do know a lot about cars. But when you drive a car, do you know how a car? You need to know how a car was made? No, like you just need to know how to use it to get what you want done. And I think that's what AI engineering is going to be like. It's going to be less glamorous than ML engineering for sure, but there's going to be way more people doing this than ML engineering, because just there's a sure demand and supply issue going on. Okay, so that's the first part. It's just Leighton Space University, like how you transition to an industry. You just you go through a course that someone has picked. You can go through my course. You can go through the Andre Karpathy course. You can go through Fast AI with Jeremy Howard. Both of those guys, obviously, I'm friendly with them, and I look up to them a lot. They're much more focused on onboarding ML engineers, because that's their backgrounds. They have more credibility because of that. Okay, so then the second part is like having just that immersing in the news flow. And how you want to do that is two ways. One is, you want to immerse in like the newsletters and the podcast that like tell you what to pay attention to. So I happen to have one. It's Leighton Space. That's partially what I do as well. Like the whole learning in public thing. Like I consume information, I spit it out, and people give me feedback, and then I get better as a result. And that's a positive virtual cycle. I have a list of other peer podcasts that I look up to and admire and recommend. So you just search for my name and like good AI podcasts and newsletters, you'll see my list, and you can follow that list as well. So that's like the highly produced news flow that will keep you up to date and give you opinions that you can start using to learn about more current things than the stuff that was in the onboarding curriculum. That's the second part. The third part is, let's just call it like the daily news flow. You do need to do something more than Twitter, because Twitter has a lot of, let's just call it hype, There's a lot of things where like someone would announce, I think exactly what you said, someone announced like, this is the biggest thing ever. And then a week later, they'll have completely forgotten about it. And that's a complete waste of time for you, right? Like, so you do want something where there's a little bit more lasting criteria, but you also have a good survey of like everything important is going on. For that, I have AI News, which is a newsletter that has, which is a daily AI newsletter that surveys Discord, Twitter, and Reddit for the best sort of AI content, best AI perspectives. You get really interesting stuff when you actually combine all these things, because people are very differently behaved on different platforms, and people really tell their honest thoughts on some platforms as well. Okay, then you want to maybe, so I think that was like the fourth one. I think the fifth one is really like, you want to get, like if you only had like, there's too much news going on, you have a day job, you're like, you know, I can't get into any of this. And if you only have one place to go once a year, once every half a year, you should go to some kind of conference or some kind of, industry event. It could be mine, it could be someone else's. Like Neurips was very good for me, which is the sort of annual like machine learning, I guess the biggest research conference in machine learning. There's ICML and there's iClear and all the others, but Neurips I would consider the best in America. And or you can come to mine, which is the AI Engineering Conference, right? And that's like twice a year now. And so I think like that's the range of learning, from like just onboarding to like daily high quality news flow to daily news flow to once a year, and like very, very high production value, very high bandwidth communication.
So it's funny because like that lesson of how to get up to speed is really centered on sort of universal concepts of being integrated into the community. But I could understand that being extremely relevant with AI, just with the pace of it all, that like you said, you need to be at these conferences, because yeah, you can go to a conference for any technology, but like with AI, that's really where you're going to be hearing those kind of curated people who are showcasing what's happening kind of on the front edge, on the battleground, on the, you know, out every day building products. And so I can imagine that being extremely high value information there.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I learn a lot when I organize these things. And I think it's also very much about taste. Like we are definitely not the only AI conference, but I would say we're the AI conference that has all the speakers that you actually want to see. Yeah, so, you know, I could go down the list, but also I don't want to turn this into like a sales pitch. I think it's very much just more about like, you want to vary your learning sources, right? From like
sure.
The beginner friendly to like the throw into the deep end of the pool and just figure out how to swim. And then you want the time consuming one where you want to go deep and all that. And then you want the maybe like the really concise, condensed version. And I think there's a spectrum of content out there for you to immerse. Obviously, don't forget, like that's maybe only like half the equation. The other half is also to get hands-on, right? A lot of the stuff I always say, like all my stuff is you know, has homework. I try to give homework to people so that they can get hands-on, because that's where you do the most learning.
Yeah, so, and even with the, go ahead, Tracy.
No, I just, going back to like kind of like what you're supposed to learn, right? Like, I think the RAG stack or RAG is thrown around a lot. And I can't tell you how many vector database companies I see popping up 24/7.
I did a count. In 2023, $325 million of VC was thrown into vector databases, which is more than the entire amount invested in MongoDB before IPO.
Oh my goodness.
And that's in the VC market. So
yeah, I think a lot of people are just kind of like throwing money at this right now. And, you know, I personally was like, what's the RAG stack? So, you know, I built a little app, you know, on the RAG stack. Is that what you call it, on the RAG stack, or like using RAG?
Sure. There's no gatekeeping on that stuff. No. Call it whatever you want.
But then, you know, I guess the question is like, is that it? Is there more?
Where
does that lie in kind of like the learning journey?
So RAG is very, very central. It will never go away. I will maybe like put my foot down and say like, stop talking about what is RAG going to die, or is what's after RAG. RAG is like eating your vegetables. RAG is like learning how to talk. It is like a demonstration of core competency of any AI engineer. Okay. It is but it is still only days 2 and 3 of my 7-day course, right? Days 4, 5, 6, 7, I focus on everything else after we assume that you know RAG. But if you are an AI engineer, you don't know RAG, you are not an AI engineer. I would say
okay.
that, right?
Well, what's day 3, 4, 5, 6, 7?
Exactly. There's you know, image generation, there's audio recognition and speech generation. Those are, you know, the two biggest components of multimodality. There's code generation, which we can talk about. And then there's open source models and fine tuning them. And finally, building your own AI agents. So all of which are like interesting dimensions that you can explore without doing RAG. But I would say your education will be incomplete without if you don't, you know, deep dive into RAG. For those people who don't know about the Klarna example, definitely look into Klarna, because that's one example of like a very successful RAG domain. Like many of the top AI startups are just RAG startups, right? Like this sounds boring because RAG sounds like such an unsexy name, but unsexy means money, like as I'm sure you guys well know. So. I'll make a plug for that, but we can talk about the other stuff if you want. We can talk code generation. I'm very into that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just generally when you talk about all the different things in your course, it sounds like you're just teaching people how to use the different APIs that are out there. And that's kind of
You use APIs because they get you fast, but actually we have about half the course is open source models. Where you're not using APIs, you're running them locally on your own devices or whatever. Mm. APIs are a tool, right? Like they're kind of neutral. Like basically either you buy an API off of someone else or you have to make your own API, right? Like there's no getting around APIs.
Before we get back to our conversation, we wanted to say thank you to This.Labs, who is the sponsor of today's show. If you need help with a project that has failed to deliver on time or are in need of a team that feels true ownership over your engineering projects, definitely hit up This.Labs. They specialize in helping business leaders ensure their strategic digital initiatives stay on track. Trusted by companies like PlayStation, Capital One, Herman Miller, PayPal, and T-Mobile, you can find them at this.co. That's THISDOT.co. Now, let's return to our show.
Like, so I don't fear them. I don't want to live my life without them because, you know, I know that under the hood, like they're just interfaces between them. Parts of the application that I own and parts that I don't.
So code generation, tell us more.
Code generation is the one sort of recursive piece of AI engineering that I think will blow up AI engineering in a very, very major way, in the sense that I would recommend everyone read the Voyager paper from NVIDIA, where they effectively showed how code generation in a very structured way with curriculum learning can improve the performance of AI agents way more than just raw foundation models on their own, acting on their own, like with GPT-4 and all that. So you can beat GPT-4 and all these other top models by building up a skill library of generated code that you can then run again and again. And I've, you know, my whole thing is I always look for analogies and pithy quotes. So I call this sort of LLM at the core of your application or code at the core of application. So code core versus LLM core, right? LLM at the core is ChatGPT, right? Like you have a thin layer of like UI, and then it's mostly calling the LLM. LLM gives you back whatever you display it. That is what a lot of people think their job is. It gets deeper with a RAG stack in the middle where you take some user input, you perform RAG on it, you stick that in the context, and then you send it to the LLM, and you still have LLM at the core of the center. And this, like, this is fine until you start running into things that where you want to do more complicated work, like what was achieved in the NVIDIA Voyager paper. And then you have to sort of coordinate long series of actions. And I think that's where you start running into like really, really challenging problems that can only be solved with writing more code and generating more code. I just want to remind AI engineers, like, don't forget that because you're using AI, you don't have to write all the code manually. That's very sort of software 1.0 thinking. You don't have to machine learn all the code. That's software 2.0 thinking. Software 3.0 is very much, how can you use AI to augment its own capabilities on demand to solve problems that arise as you go? And I think definitely the skill library approach is a key part of that. I'm playing around with Devin right now, which is very, very viral. It's on the big tech alerts Twitter list, which is like insane. And it is absolutely like the future of how I want to work. Like I always want to work with a Devin alongside me, alongside of a co-pilot, right? A co-pilot is very much inside of your sort of inner developer workflow while your hands are on keyboard. Devin takes care of the stuff outside of my developer workflow, which is asynchronously, like I, you know, it's just operating on a task that I give it and I can just check in on it every few hours.
Interesting. You know, this is a bit of an aside, but obviously the Devin piece touched a nerve. And I know recently you've been doing some experimentation with, and other people have, with AI agents that you can like talk to and like...
Oh yeah, personal AI.
Yeah, personal AIs and things like that, that you can just have conversations with and they can help with any number of things. There are camps out there, right? People will be AI maximalists or utopians or whatever. And then there's like the dooming side of it. I'm kind of curious if you put yourself anywhere on a spectrum that you would label, like, would you call yourself an AI utilitarian? Like, because what I don't get from you is this, like you said, you've taken yourself somewhat out of the hype cycle. You're interested in hearing what's hype to see if it's, if it holds up, but like, you're not interested in learning these things purely for the sake of hyping something up. It seems like you're trying to find that value. So do you put yourself on this, or do you largely just try to avoid both sides of this?
Sean is the hype.
I do lean on the more hypey side. That's just cause I think there's just a lot to celebrate and, you know, what a time to be alive. But yeah, I don't go full hype because I definitely see some disingenuous hypesters out there, and you know, I'm not going to name names, but if everything is awesome, nothing's awesome, right? Like that's just how it is. What camp? I am not EAC. I am not a regulate everything person. I'm somewhere in between, but I am on the more sort of fatalistic side in a sense that we have started a train that we cannot stop. And there is absolutely in the entire complete history of life, every time a more civilized, every time a more advanced life form encounters a less advanced life form, the less advanced life form accidentally gets stubbed out, just pure accident. And so like, oops, like we didn't mean to, but like, we just passed you like a disease that just killed off all of you. Like, oops, you know? And so I do view AI as an emerging life form that will be sentient, and we have to do our best to stay in the light cone that lets us coexist with these things rather than be completely wiped out. And we may not succeed, but that's also many, many, many thousands of years away than I have to deal with. So you know that's I know, but I do think AI safety is important. I respect the people working on alignments because. If we care about the human race, then that is what we should work on.
Interesting. Yeah, that was a bit of an aside. So apologies. I'll take us back to Devin here for a minute, because I was curious. You gave this update on Devin where you had mentioned that you had shipped Swift code and written Elixir or multiplayer apps and ported projects and done all this. And you sort of end that by going, I don't know half of those technologies. So yeah. Can you walk me through what that and walk us through what that workflow felt like for you? You mentioned that you kind of were a semi-technical supervisor. Like, what does that give us a sense of what that sensation was, that process of what you were tasking it with and kind of where you had to jump in and in what format that was?
Yeah, this thing is on YouTube, right? Like, can we use this as an opportunity to get people on the Modern Web YouTube, right? Like, I know as a podcaster, like it's the YouTube always goes, doesn't perform as well as the audio. So subscribe, like, and subscribe to the YouTube channel, guys. So like everything I said is real. This is the Devin interface. This is what I've been working on. You know, I can talk about the, where's the Swift app? I don't think this is the exact Swift app that I was working on, but basically, you know, you give it a task at the start. So here I said, build an iOS app that can connect to the voice API, log conversations into a database and allow users to scroll through. And then it starts creating an app. And you know, I started this conversation at 1 p.m. 2 hours, 1 hour later, I asked it for a link to download the app. It's still being developed, so I just communicate back and forth like I'm talking to a junior engineer on Slack, right? It's developing on the side. I can click into what it's working on at any given point in time. And I can see, like, I can supervise the progress. I can asynchronously talk to it and say, like, hey, you're on the wrong track. And it'll change its plan based on based on what I just told it. And I think the workflow is just really great. So this one took about 30 minutes, apparently, before I asked it to stop because I wanted to work on other things. But yeah, this is really fantastic. I'll give you one more example, which is like, so I think a lot of the coding agents rely on the embedded knowledge within the LLM, right? Like whatever GPT-4 has learned implicitly within its weights is what it knows. But I think a lot of the times you actually want to refer to things that are outside of its knowledge, right? So here's an example where I'm asking it to rewrite a repo. I just drop in a repo and I'm saying like, all right, this repo uses Airflow, which is this orchestration framework. I want it to use a different framework. I want you to rewrite it to Dagster. Here are the docs for Dagster that you should read, right? And then it's going to go and browse the docs using GPT Vision and read the docs and figure out what to do and implement that. Right. And it's going to, so it's like this unique combination of browser, shell.
This is like way better than v0.dev, all the hypey things.
Yeah.
v0.dev was impressive. And now I'm like, well, no, this is even better.
I mean, I think it's clonable. People are trying to clone it. But I don't think that people, are as successful as Devin because Devin is very, very tightly integrated version. Right. And it ultimately, it's made PRs for me. It's contributed PRs to app that shipped to the App Store. Like it's like very, very advanced stuff. So ultimately what happened with this one was I sent it to the CEO of Dagster. And he was like, yeah, this is exactly what I wanted. Right. So let's see, 6.io Floyd. I don't know where I sent it, but basically like I sent the results of this Dagster project to the CEO of Dagster, and that guy was like, yeah, this is exactly what I wanted. And so this whole thing took, 227 minutes, 323 lines of code. I just gave it a task. Then I went back to lunch. And I talked to it every now and then, but it wasn't, I didn't really have to. I was mostly just guiding it to update to GitHub.
That's what's wild about this is that, well, A, just how powerful for how, I don't want to say little input, but how unsophisticated the inputs were that you had to put into it to get out. Like you're not having to put in very particular sets of glyphs. Like if anybody's ever seen some of the most advanced Mid-Journey prompt engineering, it's like sometimes you can't even understand the prompts that people learn to get the best kind of images out of it.
Yeah.
This is pretty intuitive, but I don't know. Like, I don't want to dismiss people's concerns about this technology and technologies like it, but what strikes me is that you feel very much like a product manager here or like a team leader more so than, someone that's trying to eliminate developers. Like this is almost kind of giving everybody a promotion to some level, like giving you a team of engineers working for you on what you're trying to do, which seems like that could be very potent in the hands of an engineer.
I think this whole sort of replacement anxiety that everyone has, will AI replace us, it's probably overblown, but it's also overblown to say it's overblown. Like there'll be some amount of replacement.
It's a valid concern, but at the same time we have.
There'll be some amount of replacement, yes. But also the cost of building software just dropped by another order of magnitude and therefore demand will increase, right? So this is what they classically call Jevons paradox. This is why radiologists as a job hasn't disappeared. This is why bank teller as a job didn't really decline for a long time, even after ATMs. I definitely feel that way in the sense that you can have five Devins running at the same time. And mostly I was just like trying to check in back and forth between them and just kind of providing light technical guidance on, wherever I could. It definitely doesn't achieve all the objectives, right? Sometimes it just dies. Mm-hmm. So currently right now I have the hardest challenge from Andre, which is take a Python machine learning code of replicated GPT-2 and rewrite it in C. Here's an example of of Devin trying to do it and then giving up. Like it's just autonomously doing a whole bunch of jobs here, and it's trying to write this you know, the C file. It got about 600 lines in and it just gave up. it's just kind of funny. I think that's a bug. I think it's like a sort of system preemption from the limited servers that Devin has. So I just kind of continue it, and you know, I've been working with it ever since. So like, what's amazing though is that it can take multiple hours and days to work on things. Right here, it's working on working for 976 minutes. Which is more than 10 hours, I presume, 13, 14 hours. Here works 1,000 minutes yesterday. You have to kick it off every day because they have like a 24-hour limit on execution. But still, like it's a lot of code that is being automatically generated and written for you. And I just check in, you know, like as I'm providing like different tasks for it to do, I just check in.
I mean, yeah, you still need to know what you're doing, right? So I can't wait to use this and not know what I'm doing and see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, it'll, yeah, you know, a lot of times it'll get you there, but like, you know, for anybody that's used even Copilot, I mean, you notice that sometimes it gives you amazingly insightful things that saves you a ton of times, and sometimes it's completely wrong. I mean,
this is going to be awful for our code exercise. We were joking because we send out code exercises for this dot, and you know, somebody went through the code exercise and they, you know, their knowledge seemed a little bit better than it was, but now you can just generate an entire app. And I mean, you at least have to be able to talk through it, but it's, what are we going to do?
Yeah. I mean, I can talk about weaknesses. You know, I think front end engineers are safer than back end, because I can talk about weaknesses. So here I have a task for it to generate a full stack Kanban board with cards that can be drag and drop, right? So then it generated this, I can verify that it worked. I took the back end down already, so it's not loading. But I can verify that it worked. But it didn't do the drag and drop right, and the design was horrible. So like the sort of front end interaction is very challenging for Devin. And I think that the front end engineer's jobs will be difficult. Here's me saying, bro, it's been an hour. it's doing so much autonomously without me, right? It's debugging cores, it's debugging all this boring stuff that I don't really want to do. I just give it high level things that I'm like, that I check in and I say, how's it going? And then it talks back to me and then it keeps working. I offer it a cookie because I'm like, you know, I think you're doing well. I think you need a pat on the back. But yeah, then it's up to me to sort of work with it to debug. And I think front end engineers are safe because I think this was not, you know, ultimately a great experience. Like I think if you gave this task to the front end engineer, they would absolutely do a way better job. But would I consider this a decent start for the code base? Yeah, I would actually just scaffold this out in Devin, do something else for like a day, and then I come back to it tomorrow and I have a code base that exactly fits what I want, and I'll just swap out the rest.
Yeah, or even like it's not going to be doing the front end development, but maybe it's doing all your testing for you for your red green refactoring and things like that. Like who knows?
Oh yeah,
like, that's the thing that's going to be so potent with these tools is they will be good at certain things, oftentimes that developers sort of issue because there's not enough time or priorities are elsewhere. And that's always been the thing that's been so interesting to me with AI is that whenever you talk to people that haven't spent a lot of time in it, you're like, how could AI help you? And they go, they can't. AIs will never be better than me at what I need to do. And it's like that's not the point. What are the things you're not doing because you don't have time or because it's not, you know, it's not in your expertise wheel or whatever else that it could facilitate? And so things like this, I think, you know, even just seeing this for the people who are listening to this, for the people that are listening here, is one of these things that I think opens a door to a new inspiration of like, I could use this in so many interesting ways now that I've seen it.
And that's really the thing, right? I think with AI, it's like, okay, you found one use case. Okay, you look at somebody else using it. You found another use case. You look at somebody else using it. You found another use case. Like, and different industries or different groups. Like, for example, I'm like, okay, you know what? This is actually quite interesting. Now I have this idea, totally irrelevant to building code, but I need to create some sort of checklist or system within my marketing team oh, maybe I should actually try to get ChatGPT to do that for me. I would have never thought about doing that before because I use ChatGPT for other things. Like I was talking to this other guy and, you know, he would upload an image to ChatGPT to summarize it so that he could save, you know, kind of like the data that he was data within specific images. But this is, I mean, I think it's amazing. And it's I don't want to say it's scary. I think it's like very, very, very exciting, but it's like, we better get on it before, you know, we better get on it and utilize it as much as we can.
Maybe the encouraging message is, okay, well, so first of all, you know, this is an example of the thesis that I gave in my keynote for the AI Engineer Conference last year, which is that there are three types of AI engineers, right? There's the AI enhanced engineer, there's the AI product engineer, and then there's the non-human AI engineer. Mm-hmm. And the vision for Devin is a non-human AI engineer, but right now it enables you to be an AI enhanced engineer for sure. Embrace this as a tool and use it. Don't be too worried about it. I think the real message that I want to give people is that like this was built without on top of GPT-4, right? Mm-hmm. You don't need to be an ML engineer to do this. It was done by a bunch of, you know, fresh college grads, 3 months in 3 months. Like apparently it took 3 months to build, and you know, you don't really like. Yes, there are very, very smart people, but also like it's not impossible for you to do it. It's a work of AI engineering, right? Like it's a work of stitching together a whole bunch of LLM calls in a way that makes sense, that is useful to people. That's an AI product.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. So Sean, where are you hanging out these days?
Mostly the Latent Space Discord. Okay. I am in San Francisco. We do a fair amount of in-person events, but mostly the Latent Space Discord and speaking at conferences, running my own conference.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. Well, thanks again for joining us. And thanks everyone for listening. Super fun topic. Hopefully that was helpful. Check out our series. We actually just finished, or we're actually in the middle, sorry, of a Modern Web series for 6 steps to AI adoption. But thank you, Sean. And we'll see you all next time.
See ya.
This podcast is sponsored by This.Labs, a framework-agnostic consultancy that specializes in JavaScript. You can find them at this.co/labs. That's THISDOT.co/labs. For all of your friends and you, do-do-do-do-do, yeah, query, yeah, query. Shout it, yeah!